Their meeting is about to start.
Very island theme. Feeling good. Feel brown.
President John Russell.
Cool.
I want to be respectful of everybody's time and go ahead and get started on time. If you are logged into your EKU accounts, we're going to be sending out the attendance form for you to go ahead and fill out. So if you could just take the next couple of moments as we allow the remaining few to enter the room to go ahead and attend our meeting. Go ahead and mark your attendance for today's meeting.
Thirty, but they're still coming up.
Yeah, we have 6 born right now.
Jane. Yes. Oh, yes.
All right. For all those who are coming into the meeting room, if you could, make sure you check your email and mark your attendance for today. When you do so, just make sure that you're on your EKU account so you can get access to that link. All right. Again, to be respectful of everyone's time, we'll go ahead and jump into our next item. It's one last reminder for all those who have entered the meeting room recently. Go ahead and mark your attendance through your EKU account. With that, we'll go ahead and see if I can get a motion to approve the minutes for March 2nd Faculty Senate meeting.
So moved.
Moved.
Second.
Seconded. Any discussion? Thank you for the comments, by the way, that came through. All right. If there are any nays, we'll do it that way. Go and vote now. 100 thumbs up. What's the best way to word that? Oh, okay. Oh, I keep putting away the links.
Yeah, I sent it. Yeah.
Yeah, my bad. And to approve the minutes, we're going to go ahead and set out the link to vote to approve March 2nd Faculty Senate meeting minutes that are linked on the agenda for those who are attending online. Here in person.
Have 28 say yes.
Okay.
37 said yes.
All right, motion passes to approve the minutes for March 2nd's Faculty Senate meeting. We'll move to the President's report. Mr. President, if you're in the room, I yield the floor to you and thank you for attending today.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Good to be with everyone today. I did submit a written report to the Faculty Senate to highlight just a few things. Many of you have probably seen the official announcement about our position as the third largest public institution in the Commonwealth. I want to say a big thanks to each one of you for your continued support of our students and the continued growth of the university. You may have also seen our recognition as the number one military-friendly school in the nation. We have hovered around and really searched this top ranking for the better part of the last decade. Really proud of the fact that we continue to serve more military and military-affiliated students than any school in the state. And now we're leading the nation in the work that we do every day to serve them. And so I want to say a big thanks to everyone who continues to serve our students in that way. And a big shout-out, obviously, to our Office of Military and Veterans Affairs, Lieutenant Colonel Thomas and Nick Winsell and Madison and Ray and all the group who help with that work every day. We're really proud of that. There's a legislative update in there. I sent a campus email out. Still some work ongoing as it relates to the budget bill. We continue to try to work with our policymakers to see if we can continue to have a positive impact on our budget proposition as it relates to the upcoming biennium. There's still a lot of conversation, a lot of work going on. There are some successes up to this point, including the funding of the escrow for the DO school, the startup funds, the startup funds and the support for the air traffic control program, some funds for aircraft acquisition, some additional asset preservation funds and some transportation funding as well. So you can reference that report. If you've got questions, feel free to reach out to my office or Amy Scarborough or Jordan Smith. Jordan's joined us. He's on with us today. I will make a quick plug for Giving Day. Giving Day on the 22nd of this month. We've got some big goals that are out there, but we continue to really engage our Colonel community every year. And it's a fun day. It's a great day to be involved. If you're here on campus that day, come by over at the Powell Building and check us out. We're always excited to see you during that day. And then some updates on commencement as well. You'll be getting more about commencement from the provost office, from the registrar's office, from all the offices. But we are eager for commencement. It's right around the corner. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop and see if there's any questions or comments or any clarity I can bring to my report.
Well, first, thank you for submitting the report. We have that link for everybody's review. Should they want to, and thank you again for taking the time. So on that, upon the president's request, taking any questions? Senator Howell.
Thank you for the report, President McFadden. I know it's early because the budget passed somewhat quickly and unexpectedly. I know we have been looking at budget scenarios that were larger cuts than this and budget scenarios that were smaller cuts than this. Now that we have a rough idea of the 6-some-odd% cut, what are we foreseeing as the effect on the budget for the coming academic year?
Well, I think that the short of it is that the state support dollar is a critically important component to building our budget here. If you think about it, those state dollars that support the university are a whole dollar. And what do I mean by that? They're not encumbered by delivering a service or providing some support to that dollar. And so, as we have those state dollar reductions, they have a tremendous impact on our ability to deliver on the experience that we want to deliver here on the university. We will put that in our set of assumptions now that we're through this process. We are hopeful. There are 2 days left in the legislative session. We are engaged in some conversations about how to manage, are there any opportunities to perhaps soften the impact? We'll see whether those are fruitful engagements or not. But frankly, when we take our other fixed and unavoidable increases, combine that with state reductions, it will create a guiding set of numbers that will inform our budget here. And our budget has to be balanced as an institution. And so there's no There's no funny money in that respect, so we'll have to work through that process. So more to come on that front. We will have a finance committee meeting, I do believe on the 14th of this month, and then we'll have another one the first week of May, and then we'll present the final budget to the board the second week of May.
Thank you for that, Mr. President. Any other questions? I see Senator Lau.
Hi, thank you for that explanation, Dr. McFadden. Could you though just explain further, because in your report today or your email earlier, you said it was a 6.7% reduction, and this is of course the biennium budget. Does that mean it's 6.7% for this coming year or over the 2 year period?
Now that's the cumulative impact of the cut of 6.7% of our support there. So the problem is that because of the timeliness of when this happens, the ability to find those savings, we will have to kind of experience that through the next fiscal year, anticipating the totality that of that cut in the second year. So yeah, so we will have to stack that into two, but we won't have the luxury to wait until the next to the second year of the biennium to find those savings if that's where we're at.
So, okay. So what does that mean?
We will be targeting that amount reduction for the upcoming budget year so that we will have those savings in place for the second year in which we will be fully experiencing those.
Okay. And then in your email, you also mentioned that part of that was intended to cover debt service. Could you explain what that means?
The some of the conversations that were had, folks in Frankfurt, there were some universities who received capital projects that produce a debt service obligation going into future years. The cuts to the universities who were cut, those cuts, it appears, are being used to support that debt service for the institutions who are getting capital investments.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for that, Mr. President. Any other questions from the room, whether in person or online? Seeing none, Mr. President, I think we're letting you off the hook relatively easy this time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And pivoting to the Provost's report, Provost Ziegler, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. As always, it's a pleasure to spend time with you today. I also submitted a written report and I'm happy to answer any questions about that. I have a few updates that have come since I wrote that on Friday that I want to share with you. First, today is the deadline for the Provost Internship Program. So I'm pasting the application link into the chat. There's still time to get that done if you're interested in the program. This year, we also have a Provost Fellow Program for senior faculty members. Dr. K did such outstanding work in my office over the last year that I want to keep it going by having a faculty member engaged with my office every year. Again, deadline is end of today, so you've still got some time if you're interested. I also want to thank Lisa Kay and Lynette Noblett for doing some considerable work on our SCH metric and ways that we can achieve that without doing harm to the students or the academic experience. They've gathered a tremendous amount of data, and since you all know how Dr. Kay operates, you will know that it is thorough and accurate, although she gave her usual disclaimers that it is not actually absolutely perfect. So we will take that into account. The deans and associate provosts have that information. We will share it more broadly with the faculties, especially the chairs, as we look at how to adapt scheduling. And this will also be helpful to us in managing the budget. The budget, we are not surprised by this. Obviously, the deans have already been in conversation with me about, again, what we can do to trim or realize efficiencies while keeping our eye on the academic experience of the students and prioritizing that above everything else. More information will be forthcoming. As you know, these are all recent developments and we need a little time to organize and set some priorities. Finally, you all know that HB 490 passed, and that will involve some policy changes at the university level. That is the bill that expanded the reasons you can terminate tenured faculty to include program discontinuation, which is currently in our policy, as well as misalignment of financial resources. Dana Fole and I are reviewing that policy carefully with help from Ian. So thank you. I mean, with help from Ethan. So thank you, Ethan. And we will get information back to you fairly quickly. We've done an initial look. Obviously, we think it's a robust policy and we want to maintain all of the good characteristics of that. We also hope to get this done before the semester ends because it is certainly work that we would prefer to do while faculty are around to provide all of the input we want to seek on how we revise that particular policy. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Provost Ziegler, again, thank you for submitting the report and your time with us today. Are there any questions for the provost? Senator Satimi?
Yeah, I'm curious about the misalignment issue. What determines whether something's been misaligned?
John, that's something we are going to have to clarify in the policy. I can't speculate as to the legislative intent. The legislation as written does give a great deal of latitude to universities in determining how to use their resources, far more latitude than was there under prior systems.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Senator Knoxway. I believe in HB 490, it's stipulated that the boards of regents and trustees had to specify those policies. So is the idea then that you all are reviewing the policies and then, I mean, of course, I mean, any policy changes would have to go through the boards of regents. But I guess is where is that process at right now when you say you're working on it? That just got passed, so I'm guessing it's still pretty early innings.
That is correct, Senator Nachtwey. Dana Fole and I are doing our first look over that policy in comparison with the legislation that was passed. You're absolutely correct that the Board of Regents has to make a determination as to what the misalignment of resources means. So Dana and I are going to do a first look with help from Ethan. Then we are going to gather a small drafting team to present something to the board for its consideration. So the drafting process will include defining what that misalignment of resources means.
Thank you.
And I see a hand from Senator Lauck.
Dr. Ziegler, this may not be a question for you, but you raised the issue of having to start looking at efficiencies given the budget issues. So this may be more of a question for Dr. McFadden, but since you raised the efficiencies, if you cannot speak to this more broadly, that's fine. Will those efforts to find efficiencies be campus-wide, including athletics?
That is my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Howell?
So this is Senator Howell. I have a question about the new Essential Ed Steering Committee. I
Yes.
know that in the bylaws, the Senate has a number of people who sit on what used to be the UJEC committee and a couple of other things. And I would just, if you can give us some insight into how the decision was made to staff these committees, because we're going to need to revise the bylaws at some point, I think. And I'd like to know a little bit more what we're revising towards.
Absolutely, Senator Howell. The Provost Cabinet adopted this model after the president and I consulted on it. The intention was to have a group that is looking at essential education strategically on an ongoing basis so that there is not a time period when we suddenly realize the external environment has changed so much that we need to make rapid change. This will allow input again at that strategic level as well as at the logistical levels. So that was the justification for creating the steering committee. There is a representative from Faculty Senate on that steering group, as well as elected representatives from all of the colleges. Once they finish their elections, we'll get that back out to you. The logistics subgroup called the Essential Education Committee is the successor to the University General Education Committee. Again, staffed very similarly, although we have designed it so that the faculty representatives on that essential education committee also have a connection to their college curriculum committees, which should allow for better communication and allocation of resources. The pathways and essential skills model is brand new, of course, because those are new features of essential education. And those are staffed by the people who have been working on those matters. And then we also recognize that any new program requires new support for advisors. And so we created that branch as well.
Perfect. Thank you for that, Provost. Am I seeing any other hands from the room or online? Well, seeing none, Provost, again, we appreciate you submitting the report and taking the time to be with us today. It's always a pleasure to see you and have you with us.
Thank you.
All right. I will turn it over to our faculty regent, Lynette Noblet, to give the regent report. Thank you.
Here, I will begin by first apologizing that my report was later than I really wanted it to be, but I thought it was important that I attend some meetings and make sure I knew what I was reporting on. Despite the fact that I've gone to school to read statutes and legislation, I still needed some clarification as to what exactly I was reading. And I'm glad I did, because I think that it's obviously accuracy is important, and it's good, I think, to be reminded that things are still in play. As the president said, the final death knell here has not been yet put down upon us. However, the news is not cheery. And I think that it would be disrespectful to not acknowledge that and try to make this a cheery report when it simply is not. We are looking at a cut to our base funding, which was something that we really were hoping to avoid. This is the recurring funding that we get from the state, meaning that it's probably never coming back again. It looks like next year, just to kind of try to put it in some numbers, because I know 6.3% seems very sort of hard to understand. Basically, we're looking at having a little over $3 million less next year to our base funding from the state than we do now. And then about $4.4 million less than we have this year in the second year of the biennium. So we're talking millions and billions of dollars here, which ultimately leads me to what will the university budget be looking like? And well, it does seem like the word of the day is efficiency. I will tell you that is the first word that came out of the chair of the board's mouth when he started to hear about, you know, which way the state budget was going. And I think it's something that we need to accept as a faculty. This money has gone away or is going away. And we're still going to be expected to do just as much with less. It's not a happy story. However, it's certainly something that we've done before, folks. We have gotten these types of budget cuts before. I think we were talking about how, Matthew, what year was it? Where it was like 80% of our funding came from the state and 20% from tuition was...
Roughly it was back in the 80s.
Yeah, roughly in the 90s. Yeah, in the 80s, 80% of our funding came from the state, 20% from tuition. And now it is we've tipped to the, you know, vice versa. We now get 20% of our funding from the state and 80% from tuition. I think it's important for faculty to be prepared and be very alert in the next few weeks and in the upcoming months. We're going to need to be looking at various ways in which we can make sure that our budget remains balanced and we continue to provide the services that our students need. We've done quite a bit of work on student credit hour production and how we can maximize student credit hour production amongst our faculty. So I think that we're going to need to be looking very seriously at that. I'm sure there'll be other things in other areas of the institution, including athletics. But again, I as faculty regent, I speak more directly to academic affairs. But I think it is not time to simply commiserate and be depressed about it, but instead to look to your own departments, look to your own individual workloads and say, okay, what could we do better and still give students, frankly, the education that they deserve? I also want to just briefly mention that the Immersive Learning Lab Committee will be meeting soon. If you are interested in joining us, we are looking for more people to assist us in that request for proposal as well. And I will just open it up for questions. I have all the dates, by the way, of meetings for finance and everything in my report if you're wanting to attend, and I hope many of you will. Questions? Senator Knopfler.
I have a question and a question and a comment. The first is that the provost referred to you and Dr. K working with her on SCH or SEA metrics.
That's student credit hour production metrics.
Thank you. I just wanted to get that down.
In other words, how many students are in classes of faculty? So we're looking to try to have a student credit hour production university average of 300. So that would mean four classes of 25 each for 3 credit hours.
I just hadn't heard the acronym before.
Got it. Okay.
And then I guess the response to what you're saying, I hear what you're saying about like the budget cuts are happening and it's just a reality that we have to contend with. But I would also add to that, and especially in your role as faculty regent, I think it's worthwhile for us, rather than working even harder to sort of mask the inevitable negative impacts the budget cuts will have, to also help communicate and dramatize the impact of what it looks like when a public university loses funding. If you hear what I'm saying, like I think that there will be suffering. I mean, we will work as hard as we can to give the students the best experience possible, but I think it's also valuable for us to communicate back up the chain. This is what this is going to look like if you're going to continue to cut the budget. So I think I'm just going to throw that out there.
I concur. I think that that's going to, again, be something I think we need to really be astutely aware of and be communicating. I think it is easy to get wrapped up into the end of the semester. And I guess if anything, I hope my report is sort of a battle cry to remind people that there's a lot going on outside of your 4-4 load right now. And to please pay attention and certainly communicate with me, with other members of the budget committee on things that are going on. I think it's important to be aware.
Because if we do a good enough job of stoking up the budget cut, our reward will be another 1 in 2 years, right?
No comment.
We have a question from Senator Bishop Ross.
Thank you. Senator Ross?
I just wanted to ask if these efficiencies we're looking at will also include things like administrative bloat.
I would imagine that nothing is off the table. I know that Senator Lauck asked about athletics. I think that first of all, the budget has not, like there is no draft budget to the board yet. So let me first clarify that. Nothing has been proposed. We will get a final feel of what the budget number is. And then a draft budget will be built and sent to the board. I can tell you in particular, I don't think it's a secret that the phrase administrative bloat is on the board's mind. Other questions?
Hi, I forgot my name tag. Senator Reichwald-Wright. I have a question about 490.
I'll try to answer it.
just the timeline, and I'm sorry, I was mostly just, I am too scared to talk to the provost. What exactly is that timeline? Because it sounds like they're going to be, the provost and the council are going to be discussing, and then they're going to take it to the board.
Okay, so when you say timeline, you don't mean the timeline in which it passed, because it was like hidden from, you mean after, now the once implementation time.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. It had a very strange timeline of passage in which it was sort of hidden for a long time, seemed to disappear and then passed all of a sudden. So I thought you wanted to talk about that. In terms of the actual details, I think, and is Provost Stigler still here? I believe we have to have something by October, correct?
That's correct. And there's also an emergency provision, so they could accelerate the timeline on us. We have two possible board meetings to present a proposal to. One is in May, one is in either late September, early October. So it would be at one of those two meetings. Obviously, we want to get it right. So if it feels too hurried to get it to May, Dana and I will delay that timeline a little bit. But October, we have to have it done.
Yeah, and that's in the language of 490.
Yeah, I wouldn't have put that deadline in necessarily.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Well, some faculty will be able to look at this and review it before approval by the board regents?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I mean, the policy will need to go through. Now, there's a lot that's sort of out of our control. I think some of the things that will be most unpopular in the bill are not things that faculty have any say over. They're being mandated by 490 itself. But yes, we'll be, the provost and council will work on that. And then obviously that's once again, one of these things where, you know, be alert, be aware, be ready to start looking at that. Because I do think it's going to come up at two really kind of crazy times for us around finals and just as the beginning of the school year starts, because before you know it, that September board meeting is here and the May board meeting is just days after finals are done. So the timing could not be worse in terms of.
Senator Malcolm.
Hi, Senator Noblet, thank you for that report. And kind of following up with Senator Bishop Ross's question and my question about the athletics, I think if you are able to advocate for a very transparent dashboard to see where all the efficiencies are coming from, whether from across campus, so that at any time we can go to the website and see the dashboard and see the progress that we're making and where those cuts are coming from, I think would be extremely valuable and appreciated for all of us.
Yeah, I think anything that can increase transparency, and I know that that is a concern of the board chair as well, to make sure that we are as transparent as possible, particularly during controversial decision-making processes. Yeah. I think there would be a lot of support for that. You know, Senator Luck, I think you and I will be coming to the budget meeting on the 15th. I think perhaps you and I need to sit down and talk a little bit about what that might look like so that I make sure that it addresses the concerns, particularly of your committee.
Right. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, Senator Stevenson.
Just in addition to what Senator Lab said, I want to also maybe see some of the positives, some of the creativity that we're going to come up with on how to handle this. Like, rather than expanding our workload, we're going to come up with creative ways to focus our classes more so that we're not doing more work, but we're helping our students be more focused. Like, sharing some of those ideas, because I think we get into our little bubbles and forget. I teach this. Instead, let's maybe if we could share some of that. Here's how we're being creative in our department to adapt.
You know, and I think that may come out of some of the student credit hour production work that we've done as we start to look at what classes perhaps need to increase student credit hour production that are struggling to do so. I think working with Faculty Teaching and Learning Center on that, maybe one source and some of this collaboration that you're talking about how, you know, the sort of laboratory model, if you will, of, you know, things that have worked for me, might they work for another class as well? I know chairs are most likely going to be sitting down and looking at scheduling techniques and sort of exchanging ideas amongst them at the chairs level. So I think the instructor level doing that as well is a great idea. Senator Howe, sorry.
Going back to Senator Locke's question about transparency and advocacy, Senate's an advocacy body as well. You're an advocate for the faculty. What are some things that the Senate can do to make your job easier in advocating for the faculty at the Board of Regents?
I mean, I honestly think to be taken seriously, this Senate needs to be active. And I do have some concerns that we're not being taken as seriously by the administration by the way that we're meeting right now. I do think that Zoom shuts down a lot of the social networking that can happen in a legislative body. There's a whole body of research on that when decision-making people get together, that 15 minutes before a meeting, that 10 minutes after the lunch afterwards can be extremely powerful. And I do think in the current setting that we are meeting this Senate, it cuts us off at the knees. A lot of legislation has come out of Congress in the cloakroom. Why? Because nobody was on record and people could just sort of work things out in the cloakroom and things would get done. I would urge this body to consider meeting more often in person. I think that would make you a more powerful entity to have to deal with on campus. I think you could communicate a lot. And to be honest, I think there is an aspect of the Senate right now that's sort of lost in that we don't get to socialize as much as we can or have in the past. And I know the provost is looking to have us be able to use the Regents dining room again We used to have a faculty dining room, for those of you who have been around as long as me. And it's sad that we don't have that anymore. I think that a lot of, you know, again, like Senator Stevenson is saying, you know, like, you know, how can we share creative ideas and improvements? Well, one of the ways is getting large groups of people together. And we're not doing that right now as much as I think this body could and could be more effective. And Senator or Provost Sigler says we can use the Regents Room. We have to book through Ryan Wilson, which I think would be a great thing for us to start doing. More questions? As always, I'm happy to speak with faculty at any time. And I turn the back over.
Well, thank you, Faculty Regent Oblett, for your report. And again, that's linked for everybody's review should you want to. And if you have any other further questions, you can reach out to Faculty Regent Oblett directly or myself, and we can make sure she gets those questions and concerns to guide our work moving forward. Moving on to guest speakers, do we have a representative from SGA here with us to provide any report or update? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move our way to on to new business and policy updates. As always, I've been in contact with Council's office and specifically Ethan. Thank you, Ethan. I see him online with us today for sharing the memo on updates regarding policies and regulations. We've worked through some issues during our off time during last Senate meeting. So I again appreciate Ethan's collaborative relationship with Senate as we work together on some issues. There are a couple policies going up for comment. Those are listed for your review. It's the evaluation of adjunct faculty, full-time faculty not eligible for tenure, and library faculty. Those are going to be posted, Ethan, unless I'm wrong, those are going to be posted on the website for further review for everybody.
Yes, you're correct.
Okay, perfect. On a bigger point, Ethan and I, we recently had a conversation, I think it was just last week, is specifically in regards to policy 1.1.1. And Ethan, please stop me in my tracks if I misspeak anything or if I miss any points, because I think this is some important information to lay out. First and foremost, Ethan did inform me that we might be under the wrong impression that the policy on policies is going to be revised over the summer. That is not the case. The date that you see on the policy is the date that it comes up for review. So that's the date that it can actually start being reviewed for further work moving forward. We talked a couple of days ago that work is not really going to begin until the fall. So no work over the summer is actually going to be initiated. They're going to be too bogged down still doing SAC COC and some policy updates and compliance reports. So the bandwidth for that office is going to be taken up by that. And we can go ahead and concrete that because, Ethan, if I'm wrong, two of the attorneys that were previously assigned to counsel's office have left. So essentially, you're just looking at Dana and Ethan standing up the entire counsel's office right now for the university. So if you're going to question the extent to which that work is going to get done, you can trust in the fact that they just don't have the bandwidth to take on anymore over the summer to complete that work. Once that work does start up in the fall, we talked about that there's going to be a few listening sessions before any movement gets made on policy 1.1.1 to include, it talks with, of course, stakeholders and faculty members, faculty senate, and key leaders around the campus. Once listening sessions are heard and they kind of compile some themes and some directions moving forward, they're going to, of course, establish a drafting team to help revise policy 1.1.1 over the fall. So just know that, yes, we're making our headway and we're doing our homework to get ready for these conditions, that it's not the pressing matter that we initially thought that this was going to happen over the summer, that no real movement is going to be made until the fall. Ethan, did I misspeak on anything, or is there anything else you want to double tap to make sure that it gets communicated to the larger faculty senate?
Yeah, no, thank you, John. I think that summarized it pretty well. We had a very productive meeting last week, and we just look forward to this review being very collaborative. We won't be, no revisions or anything will be released over the summer. I kind of got that, heard that kind of misunderstanding in previous meetings, but the way that it's always been interpreted to me is that that just means that the review can start then or needs to start be looking then. But our work will begin in fall of 2026. It'll move through the board approved process that's in policy 1.1. We'll start with We're looking forward to facilitating some listening sessions. The details of what that looks like are to be determined, likely planned over the summer. Where we'll invite various stakeholders, including faculty senate, staff council, and other stakeholder groups on campus. And then we'll proceed through forming a drafting team, a public comment period, and then the process that's laid out in the policy. Also, I did notice that on the agenda that there are a couple motions on this issue. I'm just a facilitator in this process. I'm not the final decision maker on this, but I assume that if Senate adopts those or modifies those in whatever way, that the chair would forward those to our office for review.
100%. Any decisions that make get made on those motions will definitely be forwarded your way and as well as Dana's.
Awesome. Thank you all.
All right. Any questions regarding the policy work so far? Yes, Senator Howell.
Senator Howell, I have a quick question for anyone who can answer it, even if that's you, that's great. On the drafting team for policy 1.1.1, I do not have an encyclopedic knowledge of what our drafting team policy is. Will that drafting team policy include representatives from academic affairs for the faculty at large?
We haven't dictated out who, what the drafting teams looked like or that stakeholders would be, but I'm sure that it will. But we have not, again, we're not even at the process of beginning our review of that policy. But yeah, of course.
Perfect. Thank you.
Senator Lauck.
And Senator Lauck.
Hi, Ethan. A couple questions. Has with Whitney leaving, has your office shared what the plans are for replacing her or what the future will be?
That would be a question for Dana. Obviously, we would fill that position, but I can't really speak to that right now because that would be
Okay.
a process that they would be managing, not me.
Okay. And the second question is, I know that a lot of the big policy reviews have been coming because of the SAC COC review or whatever. Has the bulk of that work been done now, do you know, or is it ongoing into next year?
In terms of the reviews for the accreditation work, much of the time since I came on August was beginning the review. To my understanding, it's that a review process had to have been started or documented. We've updated the majority of ours. There's some that are still in the process, some that are on drafting teams. So everything, there's some that may spill over into fall, but we're trying to wrap up as many as we can. If we do still have some in the process, to my understanding, that's okay. It's just we were trying to avoid the situation of where none of our policies were reviewed. If the majority of them are reviewed and they're in the process, then we're in a good spot.
Thank you very much.
Senator Nachtwey.
This is Senator Nachtwey, Ethan. In the memorandum that we received for today, in speaking about the formation of the drafting team for policy 1.1.1, the last sentence of that paragraph specifies that the policy does not provide for alternative or parallel processes outside of that framework. I'm curious, are there have such pro that's an odd thing to add. Are have such processes been put forward? That, to your knowledge.
Not to mine, or sorry, please continue if
To
you're
your knowledge,
asking.
yeah, you started saying the thing I was asking. Yeah.
Not currently. I just know that there are some motions. We just wanted to make clear that obviously no one has submitted anything to us. That's just a reiteration that whatever policy official process that we go through has to go through the process that the board approved, as that's the only official process that's has been voted on by the Board of Regents.
All right. If there's any other questions, what we can do is you can send those my way, and what I'll do is I'll forward those on to council because it seems like a lot of this process for updating 1.1.1 is still very much in the works and to be determined. So I know there's going to be some questions that may come through. So please feel free to share those with us, and we'll make sure that I continue to work with Ethan in council's office to make sure we get those addressed before moving into the summer. Moving on to legislative session and proposed bills. I actually, if you don't mind, Senator Howell, I might actually tip my hat to you to see if there's any other updates that you would like to provide regarding the legislative session, House bills that weren't already touched on by the President, Provost, or previous?
I believe everything we've discussed lately has been
Okay.
discussed already. It's been, for obvious reasons, a lot of focus on the budget and on HB 490. Dr. Noblet, anything that we talked about today that I'm forgetting that seems critically important?
The audiology program got added to the state
hey, good news.
Workforce.
Yes.
That's good news. Yeah. Right. Alice did some great work on that. Universities are in more such students.
We're all very happy we're not in KU today.
Glass is half full.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for that update. Recently, I reached out to the president's office to establish our lunch and learn for the spring session. I'm happy to report that that will happen April 29th at the Case Dining Regents Room. The link for the registration is there, where the talk is going to focus, of course, as we keep talking about this current meeting, is the budget, the larger external environment that is shaping EKU daily operations, and how faculty can contribute to policies, procedures, and what the day-to-day workplace looks like moving forward, to try to glean some insight into how larger conditions are affecting current policies and procedures and the way in which faculty can actually step up and get involved. Everything from as an individual faculty member to organized bodies like Senate, working through our region and the like. So should you want to attend the Lunch and Learn, please make sure that you click the link, register, and come ready to have a good, healthy discussion. I know they're always informative and welcomed by most. So thank you for that. Ongoing work. There's going to be some policy work, as we just talked about. Policy 1.1.1 is kind of at the forefront of that discussion. Again, we just kind of got a lay of the land on what the next steps are for the policy on policies. But with that, I will turn it over to the Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee, as they recently submitted a couple motions that they are much more equipped to speak on in depth, the rationale and what the motions actually are, if you want to go ahead and take over from there.
Sure.
Do you want to?
Do you mind to share that document?
This document is actually uploaded to the Google Drive and an email. Do you want me to just share my screen with that?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Give me one brief moment. I'll have this pulled open for everybody to see. There we go.
This is Senator.
All right, perfect.
This is Senator Ginn talking, and the R&R, we sent out that survey, and based on the presentation from the last meeting, the committee just revised these two motions that we are bringing forward to vote today, just so that we can show what the faculty are feeling about policy 1.1.1. So I'm going to pause for a moment.
And control the screen as you want.
I don't want to turn on your territory.
Oh, yeah. Good call. But we would like to present them individually to vote today. But I guess I should give some context, especially now that we've heard from University Council, and it's glad to hear that they are also thinking about a drafting committee, which is great. But we were hoping to emphasize the points of that Faculty Senate moves to formally assert that no future revision of policy 1.1.1 will be adopted without formal approval of Faculty Senate. And I'll let you read the rest. And then motion two, whereas policy 1.1.1 is, I guess this needs revision right now on the spot. Whereas policy, or I guess we'll just start here.
Oh, just get rid of the summer. I mean.
Oh, because I'm logged into yours, it won't let me. Okay, so motion two would just be that Faculty Senate moves that the draft Dean Committee charged with producing the aforementioned revision shall be composed of no less than 90% of faculty. And then we also include staff, students, and we have some recommendations for the committee.
And I'm just going to chime in. Those, the composition, those truly are recommendations. That was just sort of
kind of spitballing, but that would be insofar as we can get faculty representation on the committee, this is what we would, as a committee, would recommend. But that's not part of the motion. Part of the motion is just that it would have faculty representation.
I wanted to just say this document, we are about to move forward with the vote on motion one and motion two, as you're seeing it here, unless there's more revisions. Everything else on the document was, again, just from our discussion, and it has some of the results and recommendations for the drafting committee based on what we've heard from faculty. So, for example, this is results from the survey, and then we have some quotes from you guys of what you put in here about having meaningful representation on restoring faculty senate approval. And you can review the rest. So I'm going to pause here on the motions. Is there any concern with the current language with either one? Senator Day?
Speaking of the must and shalls and wills and all of those things, what about shall be adopted in motion one instead of will be?
I thought about that, Senator Day, but it no future version, none shall. That seemed like an odd construction to me. So just it, and also to be clear, and I'm wondering if University Council perhaps has already seen a version of this, that this was the if they're understanding this to mean that we're talking about the next policy. I think that the first motion is meant to be a sort of foundational principle, really, more so than, and so that also means that we don't use shall there. Just pointing out that both SACS, COC, and AAUP affirm that there has to be faculty representation in the production of policies, and particularly in terms of a policy as central as this one. And so that's the sort of, theoretical foundation. And then motion two gets into the specific action that we want to take coming out of this.
Senator Howell?
I know we've been burned on this before. Do we have a definition somewhere of what separates admin and non-admin faculty and staff, i.e., our regent?
Well, the faculty regent, that's based on HR definitions of how they're classified by our own human resources department. So our faculty regent, for example, would be faculty. At least, unless you have a
I don't mean that her faculty is faculty regent. I mean, we had the big kerfuffle about whether or not she was faculty because she was a chair. So do chairs count as faculty? Do deans count as faculty? Do we have a place where that line is
Well,
drawn?
look.
Because I know it's been a problem in the past.
Okay, again, this is all just our own recommendation. Like, there's nothing binding about that portion, first of all. And second of all, I wanted to return to your earlier point, Senator Howell, about what the drafting, there is no drafting committee policy per se. What the policy on policy says is that the, what's the term I'm using for? It's not called University Council in the policy. The policy designee,
Yes.
who was never identified as such, but has to be University Council, decides who the drafting committee, what the composition of the drafting committees will be. And so the whole point of making the motion is to convey to the policy designee that we think it important that the drafting committee for the policy on policies should have robust faculty representation.
I am in complete agreement. I just want to know if we mean deans or chairs when we say faculty.
At this point, I don't think it, for these motions, I don't think it's relevant at all.
Right, but as I understand the def as I understand the designation in the human resources documents we've looked at, up associate dean and up is administrative.
Good.
Hires. And the chair would be considered faculty.
Yeah.
So anything above the departmental, essentially.
I'm wondering if this will help if I say the remainder of this document shows some recommendations
from
R&R for further consideration and are not part of the votes from
the reason I'm asking is
because I think
the 90% faculty, staff, and students.
Students, we know what the definition there is, but faculty and staff,
right,
the excluded category is admin. I don't know where that line is. It sounds like it's faculty, it's associate dean and above is the line. And I'm sure HR has a definition for staff as well.
Yeah.
Like there exists one for faculty. I presume there exists one for staff.
I'm glad you're bringing that up. I think that can be part of the listening committees when they talk about, and I can add that note to here as well.
I'll make a point of order. So at this point, do we want to actually make each motion and then have discussion?
Jump the gun. So you got to make a motion.
Yeah.
You got to do a second and have a discussion on each motion separately before you move on to discussion of the second one.
So
is there a motion to vote on motion one?
I think if this comes from the committee, it actually does not need a second.
Okay, that's what I was, yeah. So
that's why you just need a motion. And
just a motion
for discussion. Now, here's a question. Given all, just thinking out loud, given what's happened here in the past, is there going to be a situation in which this motion gets discussed to the point to where multiple revisions are made and this should just be opened up for everybody to consider? And it be actually voted on next faculty senate meeting and it not get hemmed up in a discussion and a bunch of questions.
Yeah, I was,
because the work's not going to happen until the fall. So whatever gets pushed forward, I'm going to be honest with you, needs to be laid out pretty concretely if it's going to have an impact. So I don't know, then this is up for consideration regarding the document, not a motion, to make sure that this is in its most final form before you vote on it. Would it be in the best interest of faculty senate for this to go out broadly for people to get their eyes on, make edits, critique it, come back with a final version, or vote during the May meeting?
That's kind of what we did last time. We presented these two and revised them based on the survey, and it had good support in the survey. But
yeah, I hear what you're saying about, yeah, I mean,
I think the first motion, excuse me, sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
Can I take the floor? Anyway, I think the first motion here is really, as Senator McWay was saying, it's really more of a sense of the Senate thing. It's not, there's not any, it's not much here. I mean, it's stating what's in SAC COC and the,
but this will go against what 1.1.1 our current policy is, that no matter what comes from here, it is an advisory recommendation, that even if this gets passed, it is a peer recommendation.
Well, it's always the case.
Well, that's why I like this. So what is this? How is this motion really moving the needle?
I think just to show
this is how we feel.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I was putting it on record.
But that's
yeah.
That's why I'm just trying to get the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know.
That was the idea behind it, to actually make explicit and transparent, importantly, what the rationale then behind it.
Actually, what we'll do is there a motion to approve motion one? So motion made by Senator Stevenson, discussion.
Don't discuss, I will offer up a friendly amendment to remove the first redundant formally. Sometimes you have to look at something so often and then you realize that it's so if you can remove
any question
the first formally, I would appreciate that.
That feels good.
Just moves to assert.
Moves to assert.
Assert. Do I need to make it on here for so everybody can see it?
It should be live.
Yeah, mine's good. And can I go ahead and send that to vote then?
Are there any other?
You gotta authenticate all the time. Any other discussion?
Important monitor of the room.
All right, hearing no other discussion points or seeing hands, we'll go ahead and send out the link to vote on and to vote on motion one.
Coming in. D1 back to 10. Yeah. So we have 33 at yes.
All right. So the vote to approve motion one passes. Moving to motion two. Is there a motion to approve motion two? You got to make a motion to put it on the floor before you can discuss. Oh, I've been slapped behind the head a few times on this one. All right. Motion made by Senator Stevenson, now open to discuss.
Could we just tinker with the word just a little bit? Shall be composed of no less than 90% of faculty, staff, and students.
Senator Howell,
I would read that as requiring 90% of faculty to be on this committee. I'm not volunteering for that one.
Yeah, he's correct. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the of is in the right place. Of no less than 90% faculty.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And no less. At the beginning of the revision process instead of at very beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
No less than 90%. At the beginning, yes.
Senator Rachel Bitzer-Ross, I think that's you with your hand up.
It is. The part that we're editing after the 90% in parentheses, do you mean that to be combined faculty, staff, and students, not 90% faculty and then staff and students? You mean 90% combined faculty, staff, and students?
How's that inclusion and include staff and students?
Mm-hmm. Are you meaning that you want 90% to be made of faculty, staff, and students, or 90% faculty and then staff and students?
It was
Total 90%.
Okay, so I think you want 90% combined faculty, staff, and students. I think if you put the word combined in there, mathematically, that's what that means. Yeah. I don't know about English, but mathematically, that's what that means.
Words and calculators. Senator Locke. You're on mute.
Senator, again, could you move the, so we could see the composition fully? Thank you. When I think of shared governance, I think primarily of faculty representation. And I mean, no disrespect to staff, but I wonder if that's not a little heavily weighted in favor of staff at the expense of faculty. And also in terms of students, I think one SGA representative would be fine. I think, you know, we can't even get them to come to our meetings. And so just like
a quick caveat to that. Everything below that line is like a guiding reference. It's not actually part of the motion. That's only like a proposed what it could look like. So anything below this is just kind of like a, here's an idea, right? Which can be hammered out later, but that's not actually part of the vote. All that's being said is that the body that's going to be tasked and assigned with revising the policy is including a combined 90% total, including faculty, staff, and students.
Go ahead, Brian.
So when would that be hammered out?
So that's to speak to the council side of things, and I don't know if Ethan's still with us. As he said, this is very much probably not even on the radar as far as what this drafting team is going to look like. So we could come with recommendations on what we're going to hammer it out to be, but the council's office does not have groundwork laid for what this draft team is going to look like.
Right, but council's work is irrelevant. Context,
I've been attending staff council meetings, and the number one policy on their radar to also revise is the policy on policies. It's been actively brought up by them as well. Senator Nachtwey?
Yeah, if I can have the floor real quick, Ray, because two things. First of all, the intent behind the wording of the motion, what we're specifying is not so much the 90% as limiting to 10% the presence of administration. Right. Because otherwise, somebody already said it. You know, will academic affairs be representing having a single person from the Office of Academic Affairs representing the interests of faculty is insufficient in our office. Right. But not just in our office, but according to AAUP and SAC COC. And so therefore, like, what's crucial here is who's being excluded, or not, I shouldn't say excluded, but limited in their input is administrative members of the university community. And the second thing to Chair Brent's point is that we actually have a meeting scheduled after this on Wednesday of this week with representatives from staff council, you know, pending the results of this motion to then work that through with them. And so the idea here is, As I just mentioned, the policy is that the university designee or university council, I'm sorry, the policy designee, which is the Office of University Council, is going to create the composition of the draft. And so it's incumbent upon us to express this is what we want it to look like. And then it's going to be this motion, is not the end of it. It essentially kicks off a process of negotiation, possibly hard negotiation with University Council of the Office. Then, so that composition down there, and just to echo what Chair Brent was saying, is just showing you what that could look like.
Right. No, I understand that. I understand that. I fully support the wording of the motion, the revised one with the mathematical aspect to it, certainly. But I think I just want to go on record as believing that the way this, and I understand it's a draft, it's an idea, it's a starting point, we're not weighted heavily enough. And I think if you go back to Lynette Noblet's first meeting on the Board of Regents, we have evidence that staff and SGA have not been aligned with our interests before. So I think when it comes time, we really need to look very closely at what our recommendation will be, because the council will do whatever they want. But I think our recommendation needs to be far more heavily weighted in favor of faculty. Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion items, Senator Satimi?
Yeah, just looking at the 90%, I can see there'd be two administrators in this. And I'm thinking they're going to think, well, that's not shared governance if it's like it's 9 to 1. Yeah. nine non-administrators to one administrator. So I don't know. I know it's just this is what we feel like it should be, but is it really shared if we're like essentially the whole committee? I'm just throwing that out. I don't have any feeling about it necessarily. I just all faculty.
Again, I don't know if the point is, I think the point that you're trying to make is the non-faculty staff and students portion of the committee is going to be comprised of only be 10%.
No, I'm just looking at, yeah, I mean, if we're looking at 90, the 90% just seems.
Well, my quick answer to that is that it's generous. I mean, if you look at the actual composition of the university community, and moreover, those two administrators are going to have a lot more weight on that, as they always do,
right?
Because of the authority that they have. And especially, I would put this in the context, Senator Zattini, of the fact that over the summer, they're also, in response to HB 490, enhancing their capacity to be able to dismiss anybody, right? So there are any administrators that are on that. On any drafting committee henceforth, they're going to have that much more authority and weight because everybody's going to defer to their judgment.
I'll add, if I can,
Senator Day,
that the administrators are going to see this and have to sign off on it. But what I think that this committee is saying is that they might, they possibly shouldn't be part of the drafting. You see, they're going to have to sign off on the policy,
right?
And they will be reading it, but should they also be writing?
Senator Howe, I saw your hand up a minute ago. Yeah.
I confess I am in agreement with Senator Zattini that I'm not 100% sold on the 90% number, but I'm not sure which numbers are better. There was once a time, going to the faculty representation, there was once a time when we had either an official or an unofficial rule that academic affairs was always half the house, that academic affairs always had to be the biggest part of what we were doing because we are a university. I don't know if that rule has faded or been formally changed or anything like that, but from an institution where 14 years ago, faculty were always 50% plus one, do now we're offering 45%, I feel is actually very reasonable.
Senator Zattini?
I had an off the record conversation with some people in staff.
We
were just chatting about this, and they may not want to have that much representation. They have no protections. They have no tenure. They have no protections. And so they may not even want this much representation. I guess I was going to Senator Loft's comment.
Again, going back to it, anything below that line is just a proposal.
Right.
What we're voting on is the 90% mark. And I think that we don't even know how many individuals are going to be serving on the committee. So to nail it down to a percent is kind of like a moving target. I think to Senator Nakaway's original point, it's the intent of here's kind of what you want moving forward. So
sure.
Whether that number actually works out to be 20, 25, 30, the fact that you're sitting at 90 is kind of, I think, the purpose behind the number of 90 that you're throwing out. Now, can things adjust and will they adjust? Very much likely, but it's more the intent of the number. So again, we can get in the weeds as far as numbers and percentage points, but as the motion is drafted, is this something that you all want to amend before it goes for vote?
I have a suggestion. I'm wondering because for the purpose of this vote, if we should change it to shall be composed of a minimum of 50% combined faculty, staff, and students. I don't know if that would help.
It's Sorry, can you say that one more time?
The part that I have highlighted, if we change that to composed of a minimum of composed of a minimum of 50% combined faculty, staff, and students.
Senator Stevenson?
I feel like I just went through buying and selling a house, so I feel like you want to throw out that big number first, because they're going to come back and so start with 50, 40, let's negotiate.
That was the exact, no.
I 10 people.
Yeah.
Needs to not be.
This is Senator Knoxway again. Just to, we had pretty extensive conversations about this, and that's why we settled on the big number, precisely because, as Ethan's already mentioned, from here these motions will go to University Council and President's Cabinet, and we will go from there. But this is stating our position. This is what we would like to see.
Any
so
other,
that's the big number.
Any other discussion points regarding motion two? Seeing or hearing none, we'll go ahead and post this to vote. You can make sure you're logged in your EKU accounts, and we'll go ahead and push this out for vote. That is now linked in the chat as well for you to vote. Thank you.
Still coming in. We have 34 yes.
The motion overwhelmingly passes. So next step, we'll polish this up, use the language as is written here for your review, and pass it on to council's office, work with the president's cabinet. That way this becomes a guiding document drafted by Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee, voted on by Faculty Senate, to move the process to review and revise policy 1.1.1 moving forward. On that note, I thank the Faculty Rights Responsibilities Committee for all their work. I know this was a lot, and thank you all for chiming in and getting the survey done. That way they can prepare the document for us to consider. That was very helpful, and I thank everybody for the work done. Standard applause, Lindsay. Brian. Oh. We will move on to our next. Oh, of course, I'm logged out of the wrong thing. Please forgive your Senate chairs. He's experiencing difficulties. All right, next item of business, policy work is passed. The academic impression survey and evaluation, I've reached out, I have yet to hear back on the status of the podcast document or data being released. I will reach back out and touch point to figure out where that podcast lives or the data and how it's going to be distributed potentially to chairs is what I've been told. Faculty Senate meeting format. So this is actually something that we can consider for this meeting, but I also know that it was being proposed for the last Senate meeting the academic year. To give a brief update, we were considering moving to in-person meetings and considering moving to Friday meetings, with the caveat that we kind of needed to figure out what was going on with model faculty. And to be honest with you, I didn't know the extent to which faculty from model were included, how they were included. So I did some investigation on my end and come to find out that those from model are considered faculty at Eastern Kentucky University, that they're not just sitting representatives. So by and large, anytime that we do move meetings here, we have to make sure that a move would have an impact across everybody equally and not disproportionately impact one group of individuals. I talked with those from MATA, I talked with administrators, I talked with those who are currently serving, and seeing how each one of these moves, one, move to Friday, and two, move to in-person, could affect their participation. Moving earlier in the day is an option that would disproportionately affect their ability to attend the meetings compared to everybody else on campus. There's been ideas of getting substitutes, finding others working at Model that could take the time span. Those who are serving at Model and teaching there would no longer just be able to serve on set, that they find a replacement, use alternatives. However, every time that we broached the conversation, it seemed as though a move to early in the day meetings would negatively impact Model faculty more than it would everybody else. So that was quickly taken off the table. So then the question then becomes moving to in-person meetings, as faculty Regent Novit was expressing and many have expressed since coming back from COVID times, and then moving to Friday meetings. I'm not bringing that up if we're meeting in person. This was not coming from me, the meeting on a Friday in person rather than meeting in Monday. It was just proposed, so I have to put it on the document for your review and consideration. I want to put that firmly on record with a hard stop. But to my recollection, I was looking at my notes, and it was either the option of presenting it to vote for today's meeting, or because this body may not be the body that serves on Senate the next academic year, to bring that information for your review and consideration for it to be voted on the actual meeting day, time, and format during the organizational meeting, during the May meeting, to which those senators who will be sitting on Senate will have a voice in what those meetings or the format of those meetings moving forward. So can I make a motion? So I'm sending a motion to move the vote on the format, date, and time of faculty senate meetings to the organizational meeting, so that the newer senators who are going to be residing in seats.
That's true, we tabled it last time. So you can take a motion to table. So it's on the table.
Can we just leave it on the table?
Yeah, can we just leave it on the table? Yeah. Okay. Well, I just remember last time I said we might go. So this is going to be moved to the organizational meeting. I just wanted to share that piece of information because I know that was a big question.
One quick question, because I don't know our bylaws well enough. Can we vote on something substantive in the organizational meeting? Usually that's for
the last meeting. We can do it during the last meeting.
Well, but it does make a difference, because if you wait, I think waiting until the organizational meeting is the right thing to do, because then you have
right.
sitting membership. I'm literally asking if anybody's looked into that, if you can make those sorts of motions in the organization, because then we might have to do it in the last.
This is the extent of my knowledge on this one. So I turn it to, yes, she already has her hand raised. Look, she's coming to save me again. Rachel Wissabross.
There is nothing in the bylaws that says that you can't have substantive votes at the organizational meeting. It is an official meeting of the faculty senate, seating the new senate, filling committee positions. They can certainly vote on how they want to meet.
Well, there we go. I think that answers the question. Thank you for bailing me out, as always. So with that, we'll move on to the next business item, ongoing elections. I'm pleased to report that after doing extensive search and pinging departments left and right, the executive committee is currently reviewing the replacement for the faculty grievance liaison. I can tell you that the number of votes the number of nominations received was breathtaking at one. and as of today, I received the CV and resume of the individual. It will be up for consideration is Dr. Barry Spurlock in the College of Justice, Safety, and Military Sciences. The executive committee is going to kind of look over that resume and that CV. It seems to be a good candidate, good fit, meets the requirements for the position while also having a counsel and legal background as well. So it might be a good fit. I just want to let everybody know where that stands. We should have that wrapped up by the end of next meeting and actually have a new FGL rep in place moving in for the next academic year. Lost my spot. Election nominations. We're still working on a part-time Senate representative. We've been pinging departments and chairs to send across nominations for that position. We haven't heard back yet. Hopefully we will have one in place, or at least a list of nominations for the organizational meeting so that it can be seated. The Faculty Senate roster, a few iterations have gone out about this, and I have to tip my hat to Sabrina here. We got all the information on all the members coming through, and of course, Senator Stevenson here. There's been a lot of work on trying to decipher who's moving on, off of which unit, and who's going to be residing, who's going to be leaving Faculty Senate. So posted for everybody to review is the list of those who will be rotating off of Faculty Senate. So we will continue to work with the Election and Nominations Committee. They'll send out emails to specific department chairs. They've even done their legwork and have a pre-drafted email ready to go. So that can go out time now. So that way we can start getting nominations to make sure that for the organizational meeting, all faculty senators who will be, yes. No, Senator Dent, please. Is the link not working?
Well, no, the link is working great.
Okay.
This time for me, I keep getting to my own stuff. Anyway, should Lisa Bosley's name be on the rolling off list? She's retiring.
Ooh. Yes. I didn't know if that was going to be.
She's on the.
Yeah. Zoom. So I know that she's going to be rolling off. So can we add her to that?
There's Lisa. You're muted, Lisa.
Lisa, did you want to chime in? There we go.
Thank you, Lisa Day, for announcing my retirement.
That's why I didn't want to, I wasn't going to confirm or deny.
Yes. I am retiring May 31st.
What?
So yes, I will no longer be on the Senate. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
What's that?
That's what I did.
Oh,
you're out of the Lisa Club.
Well, I didn't, I was trying to keep that one because that wasn't our territory, but, on that note, we tip the hat to Lisa. I'm sure Lisa, if you would like during the next faculty Senate meeting, during the last meeting, we'll have a line on for you to talk to the larger faculty senate body, because we thank you for, you know, your time here and all the work that you've done and filling in that role and doing so much work so many of us didn't want to do. So I truly applaud and appreciate everything you've done.
Thank you.
All right. On that note, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. Any updates to the Faculty Senate bylaws? We're currently working with Sabrina. Do you have any updates that you would like to share with everybody? I know that you've done some late work with Pauletta.
Yeah, I'm working on getting the last year's completed. I should hopefully have that done by the end of the week.
And then moving forward, what we've already got an email drafted up to go out for faculty vote. And should there be the required amount that has concerns regarding those, that'll be brought to a larger faculty body. So just be on the lookout for that. That process is currently underway. That way, hopefully moving in the next academic year, we have a body of bylaws that is updated pending the new change to the Gen Ed Committee, which is going to be worked on soon as well. There's been no new comments or questions from the faculty senate or faculty body coming my way that we haven't already addressed. Nothing new to hit the faculty suggestion box that wasn't brought up before. So with that, I'm happy to report that we'll move into standing committee reports. We'll go to the AQC first with Senator Yoder, Senator Campbell.
That's me. Sorry about that. The AQC, we met on March 18th and talked through a number of issues. We've kind of put off some of our data collection, right, and resolutions for next fall.
And one thing that we're trying to consider on our end, I know there's a request to potentially create an ad hoc committee or put some more bodies on that. The only issue with that is because we did a review of the Faculty Senate roster, there are a number of units that are overrepresented on Senate. So I would like to say we might be able to assign more people by default to the AQC. That might be logistically hard to pull off given our lower numbers now. But moving forward, that might not mean given the workload that the AQC is going to do, there might be some ad hoc committees that are set up to look at very specific issues. The standalone issues that do work nested underneath of AQC is something that we're kind of considering, just to give a lay of the land on that.
That's a good idea. We get the AQC gets a lot of
Yeah.
charges for a variety of different things that the Senate would like to look at more closely. So it's this broad array of a bunch of different tasks. So if some of those could be ad hoc,
Absolutely.
I
That's something
think
that we can
that's
look into.
a really nice
Yeah.
idea. We are looking, we do, we are going to be volunteer involved with program review yet this month.
Very
Right.
nice to
So
talk to us about that as well.
that's maybe a big deal. We're trying to sort out how those can best be heard
I know there's some questions
very,
regarding
very quickly.
policy and procedures on that. Anything else for us?
That's all I have.
All right, we'll go to budget with co-chair Senators Lauck and Liddell.
Okay. This coming tax day on April 15th, we will be spending the third month of analysis on the athletic budgets. Senator Liddell has done some very careful and brilliant analysis of the athletic budgets. And we got to the point where we had more questions than answers from among the group. So we will be having the athletic director, Kyle Motes, and his CFO, Dusty Ridner, present to answer our questions. And of course, it's an open meeting. If you would like to join, we will be at the Coates Martin Conference Room on the 15th of April from 9 to 10. If you wish to join by Zoom, just email me and I'll add you to the invite.
And of course, Senator Lack, if you want, you can send that our way and we can go ahead and push that out to the larger faculty senate. And we can also loop in Abby to potentially shoot that out through chairs to garner more interest if you want to go that route as well.
I'm happy to do that, and I will do that.
Perfect. All right, moving on to election and nominations.
So we initially sent out a request for self-nominations last week for the adjunct senator position. I sent it out. It was a poorly worded email, so I sent a clarification email today. So hopefully that will generate more interest. But to this point, we've had a few people inquire, but nobody self-nominate yet. So if you have anybody in your departments that you think would be a good candidate as an adjunct senator, please let them know to send us a bio, and we will try to get that either voted on or in place by the May meeting. And then other than that, just a thank you to Linda Sizemore for spearheading the list from our end of vacancies.
I would like to add, we also need adjunct faculty senate alternate,
That's
and we need the new senators by the May meeting. So we will be sending out a letter this week reminding to the chair, reminding people if you have vacancies, you need to elect new senators. And because we have a lot of vacancies on committees this year. And
Perfect.
that's it.
Senator McDonald Sizemore, again, I can't thank you enough for looking over the Senate roster and getting these lists ready. It's been a tremendous amount of work. What I'm thinking is when we email chairs and unit heads to restaff the positions moving off, that we need to go ahead and bury in the need for recommendations for part-time. That way everything kind of
Yeah.
comes through in one vote. That way it's not an afterthought. It's put with the same level of priority as, hey, you just need to staff your faculty as well. So make sure you push for at least one part-time nomination from your unit. That way we get a number of nominations because to try to fill it last time, we actually looked at past nominations and nobody came through. There's a comment or a question. Can we get clarification on how many years senators are allowed to serve on faculty senate consecutively? I believe Senator Ross, that's 2 years,
Three.
correct? 3 years? 3 years.
They can serve, the term is 3 years, but the it's consecutive 2 years is the limit.
That was my understanding. Is that correct, Rachel Bishop?
Yes.
That it's consecutive 2 years with a total of three service.
Right now it's read as three in the bylaws because I myself have been on Senate. This is my last year for 9 straight years. So it's three consecutive terms before you have to take at least 1 year off, and then you can go again.
Okay.
Which I will not. You guys won't thank me again for a long, long time.
Are you sure? You say that now. All right. Anything else from election and nomination?
Nothing else.
All right. Well, thank you. Moving on to IT.
The committee has a great survey that they worked on. It's about to collect data to those who need it about multifactor authentication, the proctoring services, and then also just access and finding information. The only holdup is the of sending that survey out is that the IT told me today that the protocol for me getting permissions to send it is really outdated. So I've just been waiting on permission. So instead, I emailed all the deans today, and they are hopefully they'll send it out. Otherwise, I'll probably just send it to you all in a few days if you didn't see it, if you could forward it to your department. Because I'm only allowed to send so many emails a day.
Is this something that we can ask for that to share, do you think?
I think so, for next year.
Okay, perfect.
Because they admitted it was dated.
Yep, perfect. All righty. Well, thank you for that. And we'll move on to rights and responsibilities outside of 1.1.1. Was that the big, that was quite a heavy
that
lift.
Was,
so
that was, I would just add, just to reiterate, so on Wednesday, Cass and myself are going to be meeting with Micah Hunziker, Kaylin Scott,
staff council
wife from staff council to now talk about what this is going to look like, what they might be interested in doing to help.
Wonderful.
You know, support our motion.
That's great. And moving on to rules, potentially for the second to final time, I do have to say I have to thank the Rules Committee. They've already turned in their end of year report, which tip of the hat to that. I thank them for that. But with only two more potential updates for her to give left, I turn the floor over to Senator Bishop Ross.
Yes, hopefully our year-end report will be submitted soon with the new timeline that we had that you and Co-chair or Vice Chair Howell set up. We were able to complete our stuff in a timely manner so that we won't overload everybody at the May meeting with our own stuff. So that report should be going out with the May agenda. Thank you all.
Now, here's a question for you, Senator Bishop Ross. After somebody gets done serving their terms on Faculty Senate as regular body, are they able to pivot into a chair or vice chair role?
Yes, they can.
Hey, there you go.
But I'm not going to.
See, that's why I was asking the question. All right, moving on to welfare.
Welfare, we're still working on a report on faculty workforce reduction and workload, you know, so we've been have fewer faculty doing more work now. And we think we might have that ready by May, but I think, and what we talked about at the last committee meeting was recommendations coming out of that, because it is essentially what we'll be reporting to Senate is not anything that people don't already know, that they're doing more work for the same amount of pay. And so one of our recommendations is to be more communicative with faculty regent, communicating this information to the Board of Regents, and then also talking to Amy Scarborough in the Office of, what is it, Government, Corporate, and Community Relations. Yeah. So to really build awareness of just how much the sort of structure of the university has changed over the last decade.
I'm sure.
In terms of faculty work. And then on top of that, we're pretty sure we're going to be ready to go, hit the ground running in September with Faculty Coffee Hour at the Faculty Lounge in Dean Johnson.
Well done. Well done. Well, thank you for that. As we wrap up, I do want to send out a reminder to make sure that the standing committees are preparing their final reports for the year to be presented during the next Faculty Senate meeting, kind of what work's been done and what work needs to be carried on moving forward. The only other tidbit of business regarding standing committees is there was an idea floated by, given the recent conversations we've had with council, to potentially stand up an ad hoc committee, potentially a standing committee within Faculty Senate, where one representative from each standing committee comes together and forms a policy standing committee that works with council's office. So I know we've talked about being in closer connection and collaboration with council's office to kind of look at the policies that are being updated to do a line by line assessment of policy changes, whatever may be done. It was floated to me to stand up potentially a pilot standing committee on policy work. And the way, again, that would work is one one member from each standing committee, given that policy can impact every standing committee on this body, have one representative from each standing committee form that work group, if you were that standing committee, to work with council's office. The only logistic lift that would be is we'd have to calculate the extent to which people are already maxed out serving on their two committees on faculty senate. So would standing up another committee even be logistically possible? That's something that I'm currently working through. Again, words and calculators are the rule of the day right now. So with that said, I move for any final questions, comments, concerns that can guide me moving forward as we move into the last faculty senate of the academic year next month. Senator Howell.
Just a brief point of order. I'm reviewing the bylaws. They actually say three consecutive terms is what the bylaws say. So you can serve for 9 years before needing to rotate off. If anyone was just worried about that.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. That's what happened to me, 9 years.
And secondly, I don't actually remember. That's why I'm digging in the bylaws. Do we need to do nominations for Senate Chair and Vice Chair now, or can we do them at the May meeting?
For the next
group. You do that at the organizational meeting in May.
Well, so he's asking about the nominations.
Yeah, that, wait. That I don't remember. Oh no, I forgot something, you guys.
So nominations were made in April and also came through in May with the vote happening during the organizational meeting in May. So nominations now, nominations in May, vote organizational meeting. Nope. Vote during the last faculty senate meeting because they actually run the organizational meeting.
Yeah, so the chair has to be elected in the May meeting because they run the organizational meeting, but I didn't know when nominations were due. So I should have thought of this before today.
Actually start coming through this meeting and May's meeting to be voted on in May, so they run the organizational meeting in May. And again, in full disclosure, I've gotten some emails asking kind of the why I might be stepping down. There are things happening, and I do have another position outside here that requires my time part-time that might take me away. And so to be respectful, Faculty Senate, to make sure that you have a chair that can be present during the entire year, it would be in Faculty Senate's best interest that I do not put my name forward for that consideration. It's been an honor and I love doing this work. However, it's to best serve you all that I no longer stay in this position. So.
And I have found it. It's bylaws of the Faculty Senate, subheading 7, section C, 1A. Chair of the Senate shall be nominated annually in April and elected annually in May from the elected membership by the Senate. Election to be held during the organizational meeting of the newly constituted Senate.
So any nominations for incoming chair and vice chair?
Yeah, everyone's looking at me. Do you want me to jump on the grenade personally? Or?
I will nominate Matthew Howell.
So, nomination of Senator Howell for
chair.
For chair?
Yeah.
May I nominate you for vice chair?
So nomination for Senator Brent for vice chair. Anybody from the room?
This is Jose Juan from LCAS.
Yeah.
I would like to nominate Raymond Lauk for chair. I know he's here, so I don't he can respond if he accepts or not.
I appreciate that, but I decline.
Any other nominations for Faculty Senate Chair or Vice Chair? If you could think of anybody for Vice Chair, that would be appreciated by your larger faculty.
We can ask for additional nominations at the meeting.
All right, so hearing and seeing none, I don't want to keep anybody here any longer. Senator Day.
You're declining.
I'll nominate Jared Nachtway for vice.
Senator Nachtway is nominated for vice chair of Faculty Senate.
Oh, fine.
Oh, fine. Official record. Can you go and extract me from the faculty? There you go. So I've declined Faculty Senate vice chair. All right. So far, we have a nomination for Faculty Senate Chair is Senator Howell and Vice Chair Senator Nachtway. If there are any others that come through, make sure you note those for our next meeting. On that note, do I hear a motion to adjourn today's meeting? Senator Satimi. For record, Senator Satimi just said it's way too early. Let's stay here longer. Senator Stevenson moved, seconded. Second by Senator Day. And I thank you all so much. As always, if you ever need anything, send it and consider it done.
Okay.